From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the intersection of the Texas abortion ban and immigration enforcement means women in the border zone have no options. Latest data on Texas maternal mortality shows a worsening crisis, and is Attorney General Ken Paxton using his office to try to suppress the vote to keep Texas from flipping blue?
He is using the extraordinary power of his office to go after Texas voters.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In 2023, Texas had the most residents traveling out of state to reach abortion freedom. And in many cases, they're traveling up to 12 hours one way by car, farther than anyone else in the country. But if you live in the border zone in Texas and you have an issue with legal residency, that drive or flight isn't an option because of the approximately 19 interior checkpoints stationed by the U.S. Border Patrol in Texas. A new report by the ACLU looks at the intersection of the Texas near absolute abortion ban and immigration enforcement and finds that many in South Texas have few options if they have an unwanted or non-viable pregnancy. The report is titled Trapped in Texas: How Federal and Now State Immigration Enforcement Traps People Trying to Escape Texas's Abortion Ban. Sarah Mehta is a senior policy counsel at the ACLU and authored the report.
So what we've seen in Texas over the years is a pretty dramatic escalation, both of anti-abortion and anti-immigrant measures by the state government that are putting people's lives and families in danger. And this is happening in the second largest state in the country, the largest to ban abortion, and a state with a very large undocumented population. I think we often think of these bans and extreme laws as separate issues. But of course, for mixed status families in Texas, for people living in an abortion desert and having to contend both with federal and state border policing, these are restrictions that build on each other to isolate immigrant families from care. They have a disproportionate impact on communities of color in Texas, particularly in the border zone, where there are 3 million residents who are really denied critical medical care because they're subject to this hyperbolic policing and surveillance in border communities, afraid of what might happen if they go through a federal checkpoint, and also having to worry about anti-immigrant state policing along the way.
So anyone who is on the border, in the border zone, if you want to leave the zone, drive up north to San Antonio, Houston, further away to other states where there's abortion freedom, you have to go through a Border Patrol checkpoint. And that's where you drive up and you have to stop and you are questioned about your residency, your citizenship. You could be detained and you could end up being deported. Is that right?
That's exactly right. For anyone who lives in this pretty large swath of the border zone, you know, it's 100 miles north of the U.S.-Mexico border on the southern part of the border. If you are driving north of that border or you're driving to the west, you're going to have to interact with at least one up to 19 potential checkpoints just to go from one city to another, just to drive outside of the state. And as you've mentioned, that means you could be stopped. You could be questioned about your citizenship. This applies to everybody who's driving through them. And it's terrifying, not just for undocumented immigrants, but for people with lawful status, for people in mixed status families who may be questioned, not just about their citizenship, but about their reasons for travel. Along their way, particularly in this border zone, they're also going to have their license plate photographed. They're going to be subject to other types of border surveillance that people are just living with on a daily basis in the border zone.
In your report, you document how there was a young woman who needed medical care, not for abortion, but she had to leave the border area and go through a checkpoint, and that caught the attention of the Border Patrol, and the family ended up being detained. Can you talk more about that?
Yes, that was a case that the ACLU was involved in back in 2017. It was a young child named Rosa Maria Hernandez, a child who was traveling to get gallbladder surgery. She was leaving her home in Laredo, Texas, and going to Corpus Christi when she was stopped at an immigration checkpoint. Her mother had not traveled with her, again, because of fear of what might happen at one of these checkpoints. But when they got to the checkpoint, they were followed then to the hospital where Border Patrol stayed and then detained her, separated her from her family, put her in a shelter. We were ultimately successful in that case in getting her released and returned to her family. But that is a story that, even if it was a few years ago, really lives large in the memories of a lot of border residents who saw from that particularly shocking case just what the impact and dangers could be for people who are traveling just within the state to get to necessary care. Most of these checkpoints, and then again, there are about 19 interior checkpoints just in Texas, they're on some of the only major roads. So it's impossible for many people to avoid them just to get to care. And, you know, again, for people who are now going to hospitals or trying to leave the state, regardless of what their situation is, they're unable to avoid them completely.
Right. And you have to also have to factor in that they can't go south either. They can't go into Mexico because then they can't go back into the United States. They're essentially trapped in that border zone. But even if they were to try to go into Mexico to find abortion care, abortion is illegal in states like Tamaulipas, which borders the largest swath of the Texas-Mexico border. So there's nothing there for them. So they have no options.
Right. No, exactly. People really are, you know, as the report title suggests, trapped in this area just because of where they live, either having to take very dangerous and remote paths, as you've mentioned, outside of the United States, if they're willing to risk not being able to come back, or taking an extremely long journey within the United States, driving and trying to avoid as many checkpoints as they can, but that isn't entirely possible to avoid all of them. And of course, you're adding a huge number of hours, time, expense, anxiety, and stress to people that are just trying to get basic and essential care.
And so to that point, though, about the long distance, if you're in Brownsville, how long does it take to drive to a state where there is abortion freedom?
The only state that directly borders Texas where there is legal abortion care available is New Mexico. For someone driving from Brownsville, they are driving around 12 hours one way just to get to the closest clinic in Las Cruces, New Mexico. If they need more advanced services or hospitalization, they have to add several hours to that drive.
Sarah Mehta is a senior policy counsel at the ACLU and is the author of the report, Trapped in Texas, How Federal and Now State Immigration Enforcement Traps People Trying to Escape Texas's Abortion Ban. The rate of Texas women who died because of pregnancy or childbirth rose sharply in 2020 and 2021, the highest since the state started tracking maternal mortality deaths in 2019. Even excluding deaths related to COVID-19, the numbers were worse than usual. The Texas Maternal Mortality and Morbidity Review Committee released its report this month. Representative Donna Howard, a Democrat from Austin's District 48 and the chair of the Texas Women's Health Caucus, says the findings are alarming.
Well, as you mentioned, this is disturbing news that we are seeing an increase in the number of deaths of Texas moms and an increase in the number of serious complications. This is, though, about to make sure that people understand that this is actually, though, we're behind several years. So this is covering us through 2021. What it is doing is bringing us into the COVID period. So we're seeing the impact of COVID, which absolutely did have an impact. But we're not even yet seeing the impact of the abortion restrictions that have been passed, starting with SB8, and then also the overturning of Roe. So we're behind, but the fact is that even with what we've been doing to try to improve the situation, the data we have now shows us that we are having worsening situations.
It was 3 years ago that the SB8 went into effect in Texas, and we still don't have data about the impact on pregnancy health?
And that's correct. We are probably behind just about every other state in the nation in terms of our reports for a variety of reasons. But the fact is that even those that are more up to date are probably just up to 2022-23. There's always a lag in the data collection compared to the analysis. But the fact is that we are just now up to 2021. So we are not going to know if we don't change things and how we we do the data collection and the analysis of it, we are not going to know about the impact of Senate Bill 8 and the overturning of Roe for another couple of years, which puts us even further behind in the interventions that we could be doing.
And there's one other issue that I want to bring up and get your reaction, that Governor Abbott has ordered Texas hospitals to be tracking the immigration status of people who go to seek care, emergency care, and that is likely to prevent some people who are undocumented to go to the hospital to seek care, even if they are pregnant and having a child. And that's something that could also, we could see an impact there as far as maternal mortality.
Right. We already have a huge issue with access to care. We have a huge issue in terms of almost half of the counties in our state are considered maternal healthcare deserts that do not have hospitals to go to, do not have providers to provide that care. So we already have challenges with women getting to the hospitals to get the care that they need, which is contributing to the mortality and the morbidity. Now, with what has just been asked of the hospitals in terms of reporting, as you point out, that will discourage those that could actually access those hospitals, perhaps from even showing up, despite the fact that this is where you start getting into the weeds and who's going to know all of this stuff. But the fact is that though undocumented immigrants do not qualify for Medicaid coverage, there is emergency Medicaid coverage to take care of labor and delivery. So that would be addressed if they went, but that's nothing you would have to know in order to take advantage of it. Again, I think your point is well made. This is going to discourage people from showing up at the hospital and exacerbate the problem we're already having.
So let's look at the numbers that we do have, and they're not good. They're continuing to show terrible outcomes in the state of Texas, despite the you lawmakers flagging this as something that needs to be addressed.
Yes. Well, last session, we did increase postpartum coverage for Medicaid births from 2 months to 12 months, which should provide a significant improvement. But we don't know, and we won't know for another several years because of the lag in the reporting of this data. That being said, the recommendations continue to emphasize that despite the increase in postpartum coverage with Medicaid, we've got to do more to increase access to health care. We've got to do more in terms of ensuring that we have the providers that we need. And from my vantage point, that means making sure that we have not only more primary care providers in terms of physicians, but also advanced practice nurses being able to practice to the full extent of their license and training so that they can serve in some of these areas. More use of doulas that have had very positive outcomes, certified nurse midwives. We last session also increased funding for mobile health units, which has made a huge impact for our rural communities in particular, where you have to arrange for transportation, being off work, childcare to be able to get to appointments. And so you therefore don't go oftentimes with the mobile unit, it comes to you. And we need to do more to increase access to and the provision of mobile healthcare units throughout the state. So we have a lot we can do regardless of when these reports come in and tell us what the problem is. We know some of the issues and solutions here. When the last report said 80% of these deaths were preventable, We can do some things. We don't have to wait till the next report comes in. We should be taking care of that now. We want to save the lives of Texas moms and also Texas babies, because we know that since post-Roe, we have had an increase in infant mortality as well.
Is there enough evidence right now to say definitively that the abortion ban in Texas is making childbirth in the state more dangerous?
I think that we have mostly anecdotal information right now. Again, it's very difficult to get the data from the state that would definitively tell us this. But I think it's pretty clear from what we've seen with the lawsuit that's gone on from the 20 women who have sued in regard to the complications that they experienced based on the lack of clarity in our law, and I would assume that they are the tip of the iceberg. We are still hearing from physicians that they are experiencing these very troubling things that they're having to deal with here, having to balance the risk of losing their license and going to jail for life with providing what they think is the best care for their patients. So we know it's happening. We don't know exactly specific numbers at this point, but I don't think that there's anyone who could claim that this is not happening, especially in light of all of the reports that we've had of the women who have basically been on death's doorstep before they've been able to get medical intervention.
Representative Donna Howard is a Democrat leading Austin's District 48 and the chair of the Texas Women's Health Caucus. A Texas-based pro-voter nonprofit is suing Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton after he demanded private voter records. JOLT Initiative, an organization that trains community members to conduct nonpartisan voter registration and encourages Texas Latinos to vote, filed the lawsuit against Paxton on September 13th. The nonprofit claims Paxton sent a letter stating that it must share documents with the names of volunteer deputy registrars and the people it helped to register to vote. JOLT Initiative says this is unlawful voter intimidation coming directly from the AG's office. An attorney for JOLT, Mimi Marziani, says Paxton is following a clear pattern of using his office to limit voter access in Texas.
Unfortunately, my client, JOLT, has been caught up in what seems to be a larger trend of activity from the Attorney General's office. I'm sure you know, in late August, there was some online activity where several activists were claiming that voter registration groups in Texas were registering non-citizens to vote. So these were debunked. I mean, government officials have said these were not true. However, shortly after the first rumor was unleashed online, Paxton announced that he was going to conduct an investigation into quote-unquote reports of civic engagement groups conducting voter registration of non-citizens. And specifically, the Paxton announced his investigation the day after a far-right activist posted a video online purporting to confront JOLT about their voter registration activity. I want to be clear. There is absolutely no credible, you know, allegation, let alone evidence, that JOLT has done anything wrong. But after that, you know, online video, which actually tagged Paxton. First, you have Paxton announcing this investigation. And then shortly after that, following Paxton's office's raids into the homes of a number of politically active folks in South Texas, right after that happened, Joel, our client, spoke out online, posted some things on social media, sent out an email that was critical of Paxton and Paxton's attempts to scare voters. And just days later, the state showed up and served what it called a request to examine.
A request to examine. So they want to get access to JOLT's records or documentation, or like a fishing expedition, sort of, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, yes. Look, under state law, the Attorney General's office has some oversight authority over businesses and nonprofits in the state of Texas. However, Paxton has now, in a series of cases throughout this year, been relying on this power to allege that he has the authority to go to nonprofits and demand whatever information he wants. And so in JOLT's case, Ken Paxton, without any allegations of wrongdoing or quite frankly any explanation whatsoever, has come to JOLT and demanded that they turn over information about their employees and their volunteers who are deputized to register voters in Texas, so they want all of their names. The state has also asked for voter registration receipts, seemingly trying to connect the dots between Jolt and the voters in Texas it's engaging. And it's also sought other material about how Jolt trains its volunteers and staff and talks about voter registration. And so after this happened, Jolt was terrified, did not want to turn this information over to the state, didn't know what it was going to be used for. And as you turned out, or as you pointed out, excuse me, given the context in which this arose, you know, namely right after Jolt had exercised his First Amendment rights and spoken out against Ken Paxton, to get this sort of expansive request for the names of individuals associated with the organization with absolutely no explanation, Jolt was scared, and Jolt did not want to turn this information over. It was worried about endangering its staff and its volunteers and perhaps even the voters that it works with. And so Jolt decided instead to retain our law firm. We also retained a group called the Institution for Constitutional Advocacy and Protection, ICAP, out of Georgetown, affiliated with Georgetown Law School. And we brought a lawsuit on Jolt's behalf, and that was filed on Friday, September 13th, in federal court here in Austin, Texas.
So there does seem to be a pattern here with Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. You already laid out some of the issues, you know, the raids that were taken on some South Texas voter activists. Also, we had the lawsuit against Bexar County, which they lost. Bexar County was sending out voter registration forms. There's a lawsuit against Harris County and lawsuit against Travis County by Attorney General Ken Paxton to prevent them from engaging in voter registration efforts. And we also have Ken Paxton instructing the Texas Secretary of State's office to examine, I think it's 1 million voter registration records to see, check for citizenship status. There's a lot going on here by Ken Paxton, which seems to be directly, specifically, intentionally, with purpose to keep people from registering to vote and trying to harass and intimidate people who may be thinking about voting.
Absolutely. And you know, I think that one of the important things to remember in looking at all of these activities that you just named is that on the one hand, this is more of the same. We've seen Ken Paxton over the years continuously target community groups and do everything that he can to make voting harder, or quite frankly, when the results of an election don't go his way, to try to sabotage results altogether. I'm referring to, if you've forgotten, in 2020, Paxton tried to sue other states claiming that they didn't run their elections correctly and that their results should be overturned. I mean, obviously, the Supreme Court kicked that right out of court.
But we should just point out that is just so egregiously wrong. It attacks the very fundamental nature of the United States of America.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. And so, you know, you have on the one hand this track record of Ken Paxton, you know, viciously and outside the bounds of any normal understanding of the law, attacking voting and attacking our democracy. So that's been going on for a while. What is new this year is that his efforts have escalated sharply. And so as you noted, I mean, he has been intentionally targeting groups that organize and support Latinos in Texas. And it started with groups that were providing services to migrants, and now it is morphing towards groups that advocate on behalf of Latinos and groups like my client that are seeking to engage Latinos in the political process. And then alongside that, he starts going after counties, Bexar County and Travis County, that have been trying to do nothing more than send voter registration forms to unregistered citizens in their county, and he has sued to try to stop those efforts. And then on top of all of that, you have these, you know, kind of a number of other activities to try to work with election officials to purge people off the rolls, to engage in this criminal investigation against members of LULAC. And all of this he is publicizing in a way that feeds into the broader narrative that former President Trump is also touting on the campaign trail. And namely, this is this notion that if Trump were to lose the November election, that it would be because Democrats have been registering non-citizens to vote. I mean, obviously, that is just, I mean, it would be laughable, except that the context is definitely serious.
Let's turn the clock back to the previous presidential election, 2020. We were in the pandemic. We in Texas, places like Harris County, they were trying to do things in order to make it easier for people to vote safely, drive-through voting, 24-hour voting, all sorts of things we're trying. And then Ken Paxton was doing everything he could to shut that down and also trying to make it as hard as possible for people to vote by mail. And then we have Ken Paxton going on Steve Bannon's program, a war room, bragging it was because of him, his efforts to limit mail-in voting in Texas, that Donald Trump was able to win Texas. So we have Ken Paxton basically giving away the game, that he's using the authority and the power of his office of attorney general under the pretense of trying to maintain voter security, but actually what he's trying to do is guarantee a Republican win in the state of Texas. And now do we move that forward and we see a pattern?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I want to note that one of the cases we cite in our lawsuit is a case called NAACP versus Alabama. And it comes out of the 1950s when the country was changing and civil rights organizers were coming together in places like Alabama and pushing for racial justice and pushing towards what will become the future of our country. And state officials in Alabama did not want that to happen. And they used their official power to try to intimidate those civil rights leaders, including by trying to get membership information from the NAACP so that the state could scare that organization and everybody it was associated with. You know, fast forward, this is the exact same playbook that Paxton is using now. He's scared of the Texas of the future. He's apparently scared of what Texas voters would have to say if they were allowed to vote and speak freely. And so because of that, he is using the extraordinary power of his office to go after nonprofit organizations, to go after county government officials, to go after Texas voters, and to try to scare them away from talking, away from organizing, away from registering to vote, and ultimately away from the ballot box.
Mimi Marziani is an attorney and partner at Marziani Stevens and Gonzalez. She is representing Jolt Initiative in its lawsuit against Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past Texas Matters programs on our website at tpr.org, and you can download us wherever you find cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.